This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. For all you Celtics fans out there, I urge you, ignore what happened last night and keep the faith. Okay, so the Celts failed to beat the Lakers in Game 1 of the NBA Finals. Here's Celtics head coach Doc Rivers at a post-game press conference.
I just thought they attacked us the entire night. I didn't think we handled it very well. We're better than that defensively. Well, we have to be better than that defense.
So the Celts have to pick up their D in Game 2, but the bigger news this week came when former state senator Diane Wilkerson dropped her defense and pleaded guilty yesterday to attempted extortion charges. Her attorney, Max Stern, spoke after yesterday's hearing.
We are confident that when it comes to sentencing in this case, it will be the whole person who will be judged.
Federal prosecutors are recommending Wilkerson face up to 4 years in prison. The long and troubled career of the first African-American woman to serve in the Massachusetts State Senate is one story we'll be diving into with our Week in Review panel. There's also more on gang violence, news on casinos, and actually any story that turned your head this week. So what do you make of Diane Wilkerson? Is her case just another in a long line of Beacon Hill corruption cases? Or is there a bigger issue here, one about race and representation in Massachusetts government? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also comment online at wbur.org/Boston. Well, joining me now is Peter Canellos. He's editorial page editor for the Boston Globe. Glad to have you back here, Peter.
Yeah, thank you, Meghna.
Also with us is Howard Manley, executive editor of the Bay State Banner. It's a newspaper that serves the African-American community in Massachusetts. Howard Manley, great to have you.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Well, I mean, let's just start right off with Diane Wilkerson's guilty plea yesterday in federal court. I mean, even after, early on, after the FBI first released photos and videos, which now it seems like everyone's probably seen of her putting money into her clothing, she was proclaiming her innocence at the time. But yesterday, after she did plead guilty, Wilkerson's attorney, Harvard Law School professor Charles Ogletree, read a statement from Diane Wilkerson just outside of federal court.
The decision to enter this plea, though difficult, is best for my family and the community I care for so deeply. I would love nothing more than to tell the story. However, all my focus will be on preparing for the next phase of this process before the courts.
So, Howard Manley, if I could just start with you. I mean, Diane Wilkerson did profess her innocence for a year and a half. So were you surprised when we found out this week that she was going to change and plead guilty?
I thought that was shocking news when I heard it, I guess, the day before she actually made the plea. She had maintained it. And then there was a lot of sort of bizarre sort of elements to this case. The secret witness that went public. His story about the FBI and the prosecutorial hypocrisy that he espoused, that he said. And then to watch her in court after, I guess she was first elected in 92, with this great amount of promise, this great mind that she had, and the warrior spirit of a soldier to fight for folks that didn't have a voice. For her to stand and just say guilty and then not challenge that.
You were actually in the Moca
courthouse
yesterday.
Yeah, I went to the courthouse yesterday to see that.
So that was not a familiar Diane Wilkerson to you?
No. She's a fighter to the end, and I think it was probably the smart thing given what she was facing and given the evidence that they had against her.
Peter Canellos, let me ask you, this is, she's obviously a very singular figure in Massachusetts politics, being the only African-American woman until she had to step down from her position in the state Senate. So from your estimate of this, her case and her guilty plea, does it reverberate beyond just the story of Diane Wilkerson?
Well, I was one of the people actually who helped cover the Diane Wilkerson Senate race in 1992. And so I can, you know, personally attest to the sense of hope and change, so to speak, that came surrounding her campaign. And, you know, her overall persona, her warrior spirit, as Howard referred to it, you know, had people then saying, well, eventually, you know, she'll be in the United States Congress and she'll go far. So it's very much a personal kind of rise and fall detail. You know, the corruption is a deeply troubling thing. But I think even before that, there were some signs that she wasn't, you know, her career wasn't going to take off the way that some people had thought that it would. But I don't think it reverberates too much beyond her personal story. I mean, there's been a struggle for leadership in the community that she represents in Dorchester mm-hmm. and Roxbury. But it's very hard even to extrapolate from that, you know, some comment about race and power in Massachusetts. We, after all, have a black governor. You know, there's a black mayor of Newton. There's a black power structure here in Boston. It's just that particular community has been denied effective representation for a long time. And it really should, the finger should be pointed at her.
But actually, Howard, go ahead.
Well, I think that's right. I think you got to leave it with her and to draw sort of these wider implications that, you know, race is a factor in this. I mean, that may be true. But what is a factor is, what does it take to get a liquor license in Roxbury? Mm-hmm. What does it take to have a nice restaurant for folks who don't want to travel to Newton, to Brookline, to Chinatown? I mean, these are sort of the issues that people really have an issue with. And no one is sort of asking about this liquor license process.
Mm-hmm. Well, the liquor license process, I mean, you know, one of the ways in which she betrayed the community is by taking bribes, she kind of short-circuited a project that could have, you know, greatly helped the community. I mean, the community's left holding the bag on that one, and there were some real business people that wanted to build that thing.
And therefore build up the community.
Yeah.
And whether or not you think that can be done through more liquor licenses is one thing.
I don't know. And one of her legacies, and we wrote about this in the Banner when the first arrest happened, was that what is her real legacy? Is it to build up more politicians to sort of train and challenge and get more folks to come in? Because she sort of paved the way for Duvall, for Sheriff Cabral. And that legacy, she sort of alienated not only the state black caucus, but also the black political task force, which is sort of a grooming ground for young candidates to aspire to replace her.
Howard Manley, let me ask you. I was on Beacon Hill on the day where the Senate took up the gay marriage issue. I watched the debate and the proceedings, and I clearly remember Diane Wilkerson standing up and speaking unbelievably eloquently about the rights of all citizens of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and why gay marriage should be made legal. And, I mean, she was like one of the premier voices that day. We, the press, were hounding her afterwards to get more. And that sort of speaks to her fighting spirit, as you were talking about. Now, the community has Sonia Chang Diaz as their senator now,
right.
But do you feel like members of Roxbury Dorchester, that they feel like they've lost a fighter on their behalf?
They definitely lost a fighter on their behalf. They also lost sort of, and this is Diane's 55. She's sort of the last of the civil rights generation that earned their bones out of the NAACP. Sonia Chang Diaz didn't come out of the NAACP. She's a different sort of a politician in that respect, in terms of black politicians, as is Duvall, as is a bunch of folks that ran for city council. So the question of fight, the question of leadership is always an open question in any community. But there are a number of candidates, as you saw in the last city council race here in Boston, that are raising their hands up and trying to get in the mix.
Let's get a quick call in here. Mario is calling from Revere. Welcome to Radio Boston, Mario.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. What's your thought today?
Well, I'm disgusted at what's happening here. It's like a backroom deal. 4 years is not enough. She's been in trouble before in the legislature. She had been in a rooming house or whatever you call it where you're on the jail system, but you're on your way out. In trouble then. She's an example of where the legislature is today, where we have problems. They're not getting nothing done. They're doing things on their own, on the side, like she's doing. She's stuffing cash in her bra. This is outrageous. This is why the problems are here with this legislature. She needs to do 10 years at least.
Mario, thanks so much for your call. Just to be clear, prosecutors are recommending a 4-year sentence. Diane Wilkerson has not yet been sentenced. That comes in sometime in September. But Peter Canellis, I mean, Mario's sort of hitting on something which I suppose a lot of people feel, that whether or not, I mean, you can't draw a direct line between Diane Wilkerson's case and any others, but the overall sort of sense of distrust or dissatisfaction with the state senator Beacon Hill in general.
I think that, you know, in bad economic times, which is this one, you know, people are frequently upset with their state legislatures because the states, unlike the federal government, can't run a deficit. So they're mired in this sort of endless task of trying to cut and trying to adjust the budget. And, you know, it draws attention to every excess and every problem. I would separate the frustrations from the way the legislature is functioning, and there's some legitimate issues there and there's some less legitimate issues there, from the outright corruption that Diane Wilkerson represents. I certainly agree with the caller that she should get a lot of jail time. I don't necessarily agree with Howard that she was a courageous fighter for that community all along. I'm much more on the betrayal side, that she had the posture of a fighter, but she did not deliver for that community, and they're much better off with Sonia Jane Diaz. And I feel like, you know, that betrayal should be punished. I mean, she should get a long prison term.
Mm-hmm. No, there's no question that she betrayed the public. I mean, she pleaded guilty to 8 counts of straight up extortion, where it was clear that she took money for passing legislation and working on behalf of folks who gave her money. The question for me is, what happens next to Diane Wilkerson? She is not. Yes, you can punish her for 10 years or 4 years. But she does have that a sense of public service in her community that has not had a lot of great talent coming through there. And it would be wonderful if she could somehow resurrect yet again. And there's always that bit of arrogance with Diane Wilkerson in her quotes. This too will pass. I forget the exact quote, but I will get over this too. And so even to the end, you know, you pull for Diane Wilkerson to come back and do something fine after this terrible chapter is over with. So the next chapter is what?
Well, just before we go to a break, though, you mentioned a little bit of that maybe arrogance. Some people say they heard it in the statement that Charles Ogletree read on her behalf after she came out of federal court yesterday. Here's a little bit of that statement.
There is so very much to be said, but now is not the time for me to do so. But the day will come soon enough. Until such time, I ask for your prayers.
So Diane Wilkerson, through Charles Ogletree, saying, I've got another story to tell. You just have to wait to hear it. So Howard Manley, stand by. Peter Cannella, stand by as well. We're talking about all the news that stopped you in your tracks this week in the greater Boston area. Was it Diane Wilkerson? Was it the Boston police handing out flyers with mugshots of suspected gang members? Was it hearing that the BP oil spill might decimate New England bluefin tuna stocks? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back. This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the big stories of the week, and you can join us with yours at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. A little later this hour, we'll jump forward to the weekend, because Boston's 25th annual AIDS Walk is on Sunday, and that revolutionary effort changed AIDS awareness in New England. But a quarter century later, the epidemic is still with us and ravaging new communities. So we'll take a look at that a little later this hour. But right now, in our Week in Review, I'm joined by Peter Cannellos, editorial page editor of the Boston Globe, and Howard Manley, executive editor of the Bay State Banner. We were talking about Diane Wilkerson, and there's, of course, another politician, City Councilor Chuck Turner, who's also under law enforcement spotlight. And many were wondering if we could expect to see Diane Wilkerson potentially testify against Turner. No one knows the answer to that. We'll see. But
slim. No chance of that.
No chance of that, you say, Howard? Well, City Councilor Chuck Turner was asked by WCVB if Wilkerson's guilty plea might actually prompt him to plead guilty as well on related charges.
When hell freezes over, I would plead guilty.
Howard Manley.
Chuck Turner, you got to love Chuck Turner. And he's going to fight to the end. It would shock me to no end if he ever pled guilty to that. He's going to go to court, and he's going to fight to the very end. And there was a moment there where his attorney came into the courthouse. They're trying to get some scheduling done. And I guess the trial for Chuck was going to be in early September, but they're going to do it to September 20th. And Chuck's attorney came out very great. No, we're ready to go, Your Honor. We're ready to go, but we'll wait on this thing. You know, so it's they're ready to go on that. Yeah, they're ready to go.
Let's get a quick call in here. Laura's calling from Brookline. Welcome to Radio Boston, Laura.
Why is she being singled out when other people have done less and more? This is a crime against a black woman.
Laura, we can definitely hear your passion there. I mean, so you believe, even though that Diane Wilkerson has pleaded guilty herself, that her other works outweigh an admission of guilt?
The people from Wall Street, why are they not taking people like all our other there are so many other people in Boston who have done worse. Why is she being singled out? I feel she's being singled out as a black woman.
Laura, thanks so much for your call. Peter Canellis, your reaction to this. I mean, Laura's not the first person to say these things. We hear a lot of this kind of passion on the story.
Well, I mean, Diane Wilkerson did, you know, I mean, this goes back to the hopes that she engendered in people. I mean, you know, she's representing, you know, not only a traditionally disadvantaged community, but a community that has felt itself strongly the victim of racism and the victim of exclusion and sexism in many cases and things like that. I happen to think that it's part of the sadness of the Diane Wilkerson story that, you know, she has betrayed the trust of those people who really believed in her and relied on her. Now, some of those people are going to, you know, stick with her and are going to feel as though she's being singled out. And, you know, their mistrust of the system is something that was earned because of abuses in the system in the past. I mean, all I can say is that I personally feel like she was not singled out, that in fact she was an egregious offender.
I think that's absolutely right. And when you look at what the record is, I mean, look at Sal DeMancy. I mean, he's under investigation. I mean, his treatment by the police was totally different than what was meted out to Diane Wilkerson. But I think Duvall's ethics reform package gets very little light that he wanted to restore some sort of credibility back to the state house. And you look at the other, Anthony Coluccio, who was drummed out, Mazzilli, who was drummed out. So it's not true that she's being singled out.
Howard, let me ask you one last question on this Diane Wilkerson story, because, you know, we did mention that we have a black governor currently in Massachusetts. But on the other hand, I still come back to the fact that, you know, she was the first African-American woman state senator. And those state senators are the ones who really are representing people on the ground in a granular level. They're doing that advocacy work. And you'd also mentioned that, you know, maybe there isn't enough of a system to groom and bring in the next generation of black political leaders who would actually serve in office, like state senate. So really, with her absenting the stage now, is there any movement to get more young people into that process, to develop more leaders?
There's definitely a big move right now. I mean, that's why you see a Sonia Chang Diaz. That's why you see a Tito Jackson. That's why you see Ernesto Arroyo. Trying to get in the loop. And some of this is sparked by Duvall. Some of it is sparked by Obama. But the main thing is that there was no openings. So now that Diane is gone, I mean, the political calculus is that there's somebody's got to run for that seat. And so who's there? So some of it is need and some of it is the time. And I think a lot of folks believe that it's the time.
But we've also seen black candidates succeed in all white districts or largely white districts. I mean, Seti Warren, who's the mayor of Newton, is a former John Kerry aide, as is Ayanna Pressley, who's a citywide city councilor in Boston now. So I think just in the last year, and Tito Jackson was a strong candidate for the citywide city council seats, at large city council seats. So you are starting to see some new faces emerge, and it's a positive story. And Sonia Chang Diaz, even though she's not black, she you know, represents a largely black district. She is herself a woman of color, and she's a great leader for the future as well. So,
and she's on the ground listening, holding the meetings, and doing all the stuff that Diane. Now, no one can be Diane. I mean, Diane was taking the phone calls from the mothers who lost their son. She was doing fighting for aid and all that sort of stuff. And to the extent that Sonia is going to fill up that spot, those are pretty big shoes to fill for her.
Well, speaking of mothers losing their sons, another major story in Boston this week was the tragic shooting of 14-year-old Nicholas Fombe Davis. He was not a member of any gang, but a relative of his supposedly was. And a neighbor of Nicholas's, Nicole McFarland, she's the one who found the young 14-year-old after he'd been shot.
And he just looked at me and he put his head to the left, clenched his fist, and he just closed his eyes. And ma'am, when I seen the color leave his face.
It was really kind of a shocking story, the way that young man died. But then thereafter, the Boston Police Department released these flyers over parts of the city that had mugshots or photographs of alleged gang members. And that sort of raised a bunch of questions of what they were trying to accomplish there and whether or not were any civil liberties of these young men, mostly on the flyers, violated. So, Peter Canellis, do we know of BPD having done anything like this before, and what their overall goal was here?
Well, I mean, they've done this in the past, like 20 years in the past, when they also had a bunch of cases that went belly up, and a bunch of people who were wrongly accused, some of whom went to prison, and then were later exonerated. So I think that people have to regard with skepticism the police coming forward and saying this is a person who's known to us or is a known gang member. I mean, we have legal processes that determine whether people are guilty of crimes. The police can't just declare it. On the other hand, you know, I would feel better about it if they were saying these are people who are suspects in the investigations into some of these recent shootings, which is much more the normal, you know, investigative process. So. Mm-hmm.
Howard Manley, I mean, one thing that BPD said is they wanted to produce a sense of shame in these young men.
Well, I mean, again, and this is where this disconnect comes in. I mean, the fact that some of these kids weren't photographed, they may feel that they have to go out and do something else. I mean, so and it could be a sense of pride that they're known to police. But, I mean, my point is, even though it may not be or it'll pass constitutional muster, it's a mess, and anything to save a life, that's fine. But then arrest them. If you're going to, why fool around with just putting the picture on the flyer? Arrest them.
So just identifying them is not enough.
In a
community where many people might already know who these young men
exactly.
are.
Exactly. They already know what they're doing. They're already, for the most part. So, I mean, your job is to get people off the streets that mm-hmm. are a danger to the public.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because we had a lot of online comments about this story and whether or not, for example, the civil liberties of these young men who are pictured on the flyer were violated. And one commenter, Peter, he had this to say. He said, how about the civil liberties of the many law-abiding citizens of Dorchester, Roxbury, Mattapan, their right to peace and tranquility, or the right to their very lives themselves, their liberty and their pursuit of their happiness? Let the police do their jobs. I mean, is that something that you that
Yeah,
you sense?
I don't have a lot of sympathy for those kinds of comments, just because this is what the police are trying to feed. You know, it's almost like a political issue where they want to show the community that they're out there. They want to show the community that they're working hard. But, you know, whenever you have somebody's civil liberties who are infringed, you know, other people say, well, what about the rights of the innocent people? It's like, you know, we're not accusing these people. You know, why are we worried about the wrong accusations? I mean, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, we have legal processes for a reason to determine who did what. And just because the police say that somebody is a gang member doesn't mean that they are a gang member. And, you know, the community can then thump their chests over, you know, what about all the innocent people? But look, the innocent people may well be some of the people the police are passing around the pictures of. So mm-hmm. that's a problem there.
Well, finally today, as we do every Friday, we also like to bring in a little hubbub, or those news stories that may not have made front page news in any newspaper or your respective papers. So, Peter Canellis, can I start with you? What's your hubbub for this Friday?
My hubbub, unfortunately, it did make page one, but it's on a slightly different angle of page one. I think the fact that Richie Neal is the congressman from Springfield, Massachusetts, is in potentially in line to be the head of the Ways and Means Committee could be a very big deal for Massachusetts. We've lost a lot of political clout with the loss of Senator Kennedy. You know, while people like Ed Markey and Barney Frank have a lot of power in their own areas, that those are not pork barrel positions in a way that they have. Ways and Means Committee Chairman will deliver a lot of federal money to Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. That could be a big boon for the state.
Howard Manley, your hubbub?
A little political as well. I think the rise of Duvall, I mean, when you look back at 3 months ago, he was a target for just about anyone. And so now he's sort of solidified his base. He's gone out. And now with the Democratic state convention in Worcester this weekend, I think you're going to see that base solidified, energized, and Duvall running around as if he's the governor for another term.
Yeah, he was on our show 3 weeks ago, and he looked at me and said, all you guys talk, you're talking about me like I'm just hanging on by my fingernails. So
it's an incredible little story.
How things change in Massachusetts politics in just a couple of weeks. Well, mine has to do with the connection between what's going on down in the Gulf with that oil spill and actually small business owners who own BP stations here in Massachusetts, because they've been seeing a big hit in the number of customers coming and taking gas from them. This one from the Patriot Ledger. Because out in Hingham, one BP gas station owner says that he's pumping half his usual volume this month as he did last month. And it's actually not directly related to the oil spill. It's more related to the prices that he's forced to be to charge, 10 to 15 cents higher per gallon than what his competitors are charging. So a number of local BP gas station owners have banded together and are threatening to sue Green Valley. That's the local distributor of BP gas and BP himself. But that oil spill keeps making news here, even in small ways, because this gas station owner said a loyal customer came to him earlier in the morning and said, quote, "Can you cover that sign, that BP sign, with a black drape? I don't want to give my money to people dirtying my ocean and killing my fish." So a little more hubbub today on Radio Boston. Howard Manley, executive editor for the Bay State Banner. Real pleasure to have you on Radio Boston.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Peter Canellis, editorial page editor at the Boston Globe. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.